Okay, welcome everybody to this special edition webinar looking at the intersection of AI and crypto, brought to you by Outlier Ventures. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jamie Burke, founder and chairman of Outlier Ventures, and I'm going to be your host for what I hope to be a very insightful discussion with some of the leading projects from across our portfolio. Today, I am joined by guests Mine Shake of Fetch.ai, Bruce Pond from Ocean Protocol, and Paul Claudius from Deer. Each of our guests play a pivotal role in shaping the AI crypto landscape and new data economy or open data economy. They've been working on this stuff before it was cool. You could say that they are OGs in the space. They are all three investments that Outlier Ventures have made over several years, and in fact, across several cycles. And so they have unique insights into this space, both as founders and builders. And really, today we're going to be talking about three things over about a 45-minute episode. Firstly, it's exploring a shared thesis for crypto and AI, and as I said, new data economy, open data economy, whatever you want to call it. And from our perspective, why all roads lead to Web3. Secondly, as founders who've been executing in the space, I want to really delve into their learning and advice for Web3 founders, much of which is going to be featured in our upcoming AI and crypto Basecamp acceleration program, which they'll also be joining as portfolio partners. And then thirdly, we're going to be talking about a really exciting innovation in the space, a first really, the ASI token merger, of which both Fetch and Ocean are participating in, and what we think that represents generally as a market trend, perhaps consolidation in the space, but then specifically their motivations behind that and the growing momentum, or as we called it back in the day, gravity around building community token economies. So without ado, we're going to jump into, I guess, a quick introduction to each founder, but really in the context of, let's call it this kind of crypto AI Web3 stack. One of the things we've always said when we're thinking about our portfolio is that it's not kind of this passive portfolio that's just perhaps unified by a thesis, a conceptual thesis or a philosophy. It really is, because of the nature of Web3 and its composability, a stack where you can combine technologies, literally as we're seeing in the merger that's happening within ASI, but more generally where there's ease of collaboration and both across within our portfolio and then within the wider ecosystem, which I know Deer Data can give some perspectives on. So maybe we start kind of at the data layer with Ocean Protocol, Bruce. So could you perhaps, you know, frame Ocean in the context of this stack?
So for Ocean Protocol, we've been working actually in space since 2013. We thought about Ocean Protocol starting in 2016, 2017. This acknowledgement that blockchains are perfect for handling data. Given EVM technology, you could also build in things like access control, privacy preserving compute, and a whole set of tools to help people manage the data using blockchain and smart contract technology.
Beautifully succinct there. It's like you said that a million times. Thanks, Bruce. Paul, we can talk about Deer. So obviously, it's then kind of what we're able to do with this data, how we can kind of trigger both real world and on-chain actions, and I guess the importance of trustful oracles.
For those of you who are not familiar with Deer, we are a leading oracle provider. So our role is basically making external critical data accessible at all times on various blockchains. So we started out in 2018. I think we were possibly one of the first Basecamp participants. Jamie, you know this better.
Yeah, I think it's program. So acceleration program two.
I don't know. Yeah. Fast forward today, we're providing oracles on 40 of the leading blockchain ecosystems, and with a dominant use case of decentralized finance, providing these applications with data in a trustworthy, transparent way and ensuring availability for data as this is critical within their process. I think the benefits of making data accessible, adhering to these standards, transparency, trustworthiness, and availability is something we see provides not only value, obviously, within the context of decentralized finance, but also in the application when it comes to processes being on an application layer within a broader AI framework or on a model level. So here we obviously see now the first projects which are specifying with us their data needs and how we can make them in a similar way accessible to them, leveraging here really this intersection of AI and Web3.
And a really good kind of segue, I guess, to Hamayan, when we're thinking of what then happens at the agent layer with Fetch.
Probably the first project from Outlier, right?
Pre-Human Accelerators. I think technically you would say we incubated you like what, several years ago? Yeah.
The thesis which I've been following in Fetch is that you have data, you have compute, you have inferences, you have these AIs which are going to be collaborating with each other. The basis of this comes from once we exited DeepMind, which I was part of. And it became very clear that if you want to bring all these components together and actually in a coherent way execute a task based on all these components or some of these components, you need an application layer, which has to be very different from this monolithic singular design application layer. So we started working on the agentic network and the framework for bringing multi-agent systems to life. Looked at all the research that was happening in the market, and we realized that academically, there's quite a few agent frameworks, but commercially, there weren't any. And so we started working on bringing agent framework to life, which connects all these components together.
As some of you kind of alluded to, we've been working together, collaborating in different ways for several years. H, as you said, you know, one of the first, if not the first projects we worked with Outlier when it was more kind of incubation. And this was kind of very much at a deep tech stage, like R&D, quite far away from commercialization. Roughly the same time, collaboration with Ocean, I think with friends and family around, technically not incubated or accelerated, but very close collaboration, both in the context of data, but then also token design, token engineering, of course, with Trent and a lot of innovation that's been happening there. More recently, but again, you know, several years ago, Ear Data going through the actual acceleration program in the last bear cycle, actually, I think you'd categorize it as winter back then. So you've all been in the space for several years. As I said, before this was hot, perhaps it was obvious to the four of us. Our thesis at Outlier has been very much informed by working with you guys. A huge amount of progress has been made. At the same time, it still feels like we're still very much in the early days. So maybe kind of just coming back to you, H, because we're kind of some of the earlier stage within the life cycle of these conversations. But where are we generally? So you kind of got two technology sets here. You've got innovations in AI and you've got innovations in Web3 and blockchain. As I said, when we began working together, it was very much seen as incubation, this kind of R&D, multi-year R&D phase, some time away from commercialization. Fast forward near 7 years on, I guess, something like that, 6-7 years, something like that. Where are we? Are we still in that R&D phase? Are we ready for prime time? Are we getting closer to commercialization? And is that different for the AI part of the stack and the Web3 part of the stack?
My opinion is we obviously are getting closer, but one thing I find sector in our industry, which is quite disturbing, is that we put too much emphasis on either AI or decentralization. I think that we need to kind of stand a little bit back and actually look at what the use case is and how does this use case either use Web3 or AI. And I think that's where we start to get traction. Is the technology mature? I think Web3 has been around. We have pretty decent, pretty mature technologies. DeFi, through all its stages, now kind of proving that yes, there is technology which can be executed. Ethereum has proven it. I mean, zero knowledge proofs, how we treat data, all of that is kind of starting to make sense. And it's at a product level. AI, on the other hand, although there's a lot of excitement, there is still work to be done. But that work doesn't mean that we can't commercialize. So, for example, we saw what OpenAI did, how LLMs are progressing quite quickly, but that doesn't mean you can create still a reliable product which you can kind of see in a Web2 environment or in a more e-commerce kind of area. So what we need to do is we need to experiment a lot, and we need to start building use cases rather than just building technology for the sake of building technology. There's a lot of projects which just build technology for the sake of it. And I think if we want to really get to this commercialization phase, we need to start building products which have a real use case. And that in my mind is one of the reasons why crypto slash Web3 hasn't really taken off hugely apart from DeFi and some small gaming kind of applications, is that we've kind of idolized quite a lot Web3 and decentralization, but what we don't look at is the use case.
Bruce, if we kind of look at what you guys have been doing in the context of the data economy and a new data economy, you know, at Outlier, we've made several investments at all levels of kind of that data stack. And actually, it's been a category that's been the hardest to gain commercial traction from, especially in a consumer context. In fact, it's a category that's probably had the highest fail rate for startups versus the others that we've invested in. You know, so from a data economy perspective, why is it so hard? You know, what are the learnings that we've had about where we think we can get traction? And what do you think are kind of the missing pieces to make it ready for prime time and commercialization?
We saw that blockchains enable safe and trusted AI. Why? Because blockchains are immutable. They're signed by somebody. There's an audit trail forever. And knowing this, it would be essential for attesting to intellectual property, data, et cetera, as well as orchestrating business logic. So these characteristics, right, this immutability, this attestation, all that sort of stuff, we saw that the world was going a little bit crazy, even in 2013, and that you needed some trusted layer where in the future, the AI could actually trust that, knowing that there's all these fakes that were starting out. And this was something that we just had a sense of. It hadn't developed to the point now where, of course, you have deep fakes and everything like that. That was kind of the starting point. And what I would say is that in that time, the tools for managing data, data pipelines, data engineering and stuff were themselves being developed in the Web2 world. So you have this situation where we have parallel development of a hypothesis in Web3 that blockchains could be something fundamental to support AI in the future. Meanwhile, in the Web2 world, you're maturing the entire stack of technologies away from the internet platforms to some standalone products like Snowflake and others, right? There's all these data management tools. And so we've been developing together in parallel. And one of the problems with starting from zero to one, particularly in the Web3 space, is we have no analog to compare it to. So we might have use cases, but the entire stack is non-existent. There is no stack. All we have is a blockchain. At that time when we started originally, there was Bitcoin. Then there was Ethereum. And over time, there were more things when we were working in BigchainDB, the Cosmos consensus mechanism and all that sort of stuff. We started with use cases. We quickly realized there is no stack to build against. So we went deep into the hole to build out a set of tools, protocols, and technologies that are at least a skeleton of a stack. We're finally at the stage, 10 years on, where we can now look back at the use cases and see, okay, what we imagined 10 years ago is now reality in terms of just the base level. Now let's go back to those use cases. What can we commercialize today in something like a Uniswap system where it's a very simple transaction model, you know, buying NFTs, these types of things, meme coins, where it's like transactional in a sense. And can we apply some of those learnings to the blockchain space?
Yeah, and it's really interesting because this is quite a recurring theme, you know, having done the podcast with Web3 founders for several years now, one of the recurring themes is people start out with a hypothesis for a commercial use case and end up having to build down into the stack to make that possible and end up building infrastructure or middleware. So that's quite common. Maybe that'd be less so moving forward, but I think that's really interesting insight. So Paul, if we then kind of look at this kind of commercialization phase, you know, a lot of the things we've just talked about there are things that happen on chain. And so, you know, DeFi is largely just things that happen on-chain, a relatively niche set of assets. Obviously, oracles, data oracles have the possibility to connect up these things to off-chain data. They have the possibility to trigger off-chain or on-chain actions, depending on what's going on. So what is the role of oracles in increasing the impact of this new data economy and AI stack into the real world?
They're different parks across the cycle when we have these powerful use cases, which are validating all the infrastructure being built within a technology and which bring the entire infrastructure being built to a broader audience and are a new foundation that new things are being built. And for oracles, I guess when we started out also in 2018, we had this very loose hypothesis that we'll go into an ecosystem with many different L1s and L2 fragmentation ecosystems. This will require different technology, and data needs to be bridged across these ecosystems and also from the real world into these ecosystems. So we built a lot of, for quite some time, just infrastructure forum hypothesis. Now, as DeFi matures, and I think you can possibly say that, I mean, DeFi is just like a testing ground to put finance as a whole on chain. And I think we're seeing more and more indicators that this is really happening. Again, triggered through some powerful use cases with treasuries providing interesting yield now. Wow, you can settle them on chain. You can use this as collateral. So like the benefits are adding up for infrastructure that has been built and tested in niche things and going into mainstream. So you have like BlackRock issuing on-chain instruments because there's demand and you can actually really utilize these assets better on-chain than you can just have them off-chain and in a portfolio. And the infrastructure such as ours, we have been building for quite some time. We now see being really used in all these different ways how we anticipated. And I think we are, I guess, on a similar direction when it comes to how can we empower AI, which leverages blockchain. And here, I think obviously both technologies are very beneficial for each other. While AI provides some more near-term use cases, which are fairly obviously, right? I mean, agents, obviously, as you guys are building them, but also just curating data, making things more accessible, a better UX. Well, blockchain, I believe, similar how blockchain is just providing trust and accountability for, let's say, finance. That's the same role we'll see a blockchain play, hopefully, within the broad AI ecosystem. And here, again, bridging data, making it accessible and transparent is kind of a very similar role that we see each other play. We see Via providing here. And the first use cases we're working on kind of validating this. And there's obviously some, I guess, connection to DeFi and AI, which I find especially interesting. How can you create incentives, especially to incentivize smaller actors to contribute to finance and also to being rewarded within that ecosystem? Also providing data which has not been accessible in a transparent and auditable way. So these are, broadly speaking, the two directions we're taking. Obviously, much less mature than what we're doing in DeFi, but the interest and the benefits are very obvious.
So thanks, Paul. I mean, I think talking about the kind of use cases now where we're beginning to see commercialization is really helpful in the context of founders innovating in the space, thinking about where they should be focusing their time and energy. For this particular program, our kind of thesis is founders focusing at the agent level, thinking around UI, UX, plugins, the kind of security and privacy component of this, and various bits of tooling and agent integration. We're also looking at cryptographically enhanced machine learning. You mentioned things around zero knowledge, and we're also looking at optimistic and MPC machine learning, homomorphic encryption, and machine learning as a service, these kind of things. And then the final piece is a decentralized data infrastructure, federated learning, edge computing, and all the way from kind of decentralized compute storage, etc. Where are the areas that you think more work needs to be done? How are you looking for other founders to take your technologies and begin to apply them and commercialize them? Maybe, Paul, we kind of pick up with you just because you already began to speak about some of those use cases.
Yep, I love to also mentor in the base camps because very early on, you're understanding use cases people have in mind and trying to build a product around. And it's far super educational to understand if our stack can contribute to that use case and enable it or what we might need to change. So I think everything you said, like personally, all of these examples I find super fascinating and interesting. I'd love to just transition to like a research role to just spend more time in deep diving on those. From the perspective of P and more use case driven, I think we're very excited about how ZK proofs can provide verifiability within the AI ML space and how this will enable us to use outputs given and utilize these outputs for us to distribute to be picked up for different processes. And so I think this has a huge impact, our role as an Oracle, what we can able through this combination of two technologies. And we see like ZK proofs more generally in us making data accessible and verifying that data extremely beneficial. And we expect the same thing on being utilized in ML models. Also very UX driven, maybe a second one. And I'll give you three in total. The second one, as I said, we see this increasing level of fragmentation in the broader Web3 space. So you have the gazillion of chains, rollups being deployed, and it's becoming increasingly difficult for people to understand what happens where actually. Maybe something to hand off to an agent. AI can really increase the UX of understanding what's happening in a very fragmented ecosystem. So I'd love to see improving the UX and making this more accessible to everyone. And the last one I'm probably most excited about is what DeFi Web3 can contribute possibly to AI projects. And that's something I think, I guess, there's a reason why the whole crypto space had this growth momentum, because we had financial incentives early on, which enabled us to spend probably more time on the technology before requiring always a product market fit. And that's why we have so much tooling out there, which is beneficial today. And especially now looking at the current broader AI space, like large players, OpenAI, Microsoft, whatnot, providing the accessible use cases. I think one fears a bit that this might be just a game for very large entities. With Web3, we can really create similar funding mechanisms for projects in the space, providing enough capital for oftentimes pretty intensive and capital requiring startups, as well as providing financing layers. So how can you, if you have a very fragmented modular stack, how can you ensure that value is attributed in the right way? So the financialization of the broader AI space, lack of a better word, maybe we call it MLFi at some point, I think is super interesting, which I hope will lead to like a more open and modular ecosystem.
Thanks, Paul. Maybe a good segue to Bruce. Maybe we continue that kind of format of three. Feel free to add more than if you've got three, but three kind of key areas of innovation opportunity that you're seeing that you'd like to invite founders to solve for. It doesn't have to be exclusive to Ocean, of course, can be more broader.
I would pop stack, and I would say there's a spectrum of hypotheses that range from core primitives and building blocks all the way straight to an app. And I think that what we've established already in this call is that we're already further along the spectrum so people can try out various use cases. That being said, I think that the core primitives are still useful to be building on because we're nowhere near where we need to be in order for kind of an open data and AI ecosystem, right? The whole spectrum of tools that are available in Web 2, we're maybe at 10% of that in Web 3. Because crypto and Web 3 is, in my mind, a general purpose technology. It's one of these technologies that can cause innovation to flourish for the next 30 years just on its own, not even combining with other things like AI, robotics, and all these other things. The business models always look different whenever a general purpose technology is involved. And that is what every founder is solving for. If we use a Web2 playbook, I don't know if that works. So for instance, just use something like Uniswap. Of course, the way you make money is quite similar across different products and services like fees, subscription, all that sort of stuff. But the business model of something like Uniswap is fundamentally different than what we see in Web 2. It makes resources available to everybody at zero cost to the protocol makers. And then you can build stuff on top of it, like analytics that are subscription-based and all this sort of stuff. And that's a puzzle every founder has. So I actually don't have a very clean answer for you, other than these are the two ways that I was thinking about it. There's a spectrum of hypotheses. Pick where you want to be on that spectrum, depending on your technical ability and how ambitious you are. And secondly, the monetization model probably looks completely different than what you expect based off that use case. And so if you think of a use case, well, if we do this and we think about this and we do a subscription model and blah, 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 and then you find out, there's no stack and you have to go deeper. and all of a sudden you're dealing with middleware and tools, and all of a sudden your user base is completely different than what you started with. I mean, that's a typical founder journey in Web3. This is the way I think about it. A spectrum of hypotheses from the bare metal all the way to like a very slick user interface. And then secondly is the monetization model. I don't know what that's going to be. I think that that's probably what Outlier Ventures needs to solve for.
And you've already kind of started to stray into the next section, which I'll come back to after getting Hermione's perspective, navigating this early stage of being a Web3 founder, because it's not just kind of technical innovation, it's business model innovation. And of course, both of those things also bring risk. And that's in a wider regulatory environment, which again, we've got crypto, we've got AI, we've got data, all of which have their own kind of moving parts. So it's an order of magnitude more complicated to be a Web3 founder than kind of a classic Web2 founder. So we're definitely going to come back to that. But H, you know, where are you at now in thinking about the opportunity for both those Web3 founders who may be looking at primitives, middleware, or even applications, as well as people that are perhaps entirely new to Web3, they're interested in the application of AI and they're just looking at something like Fetch as a alternative kind of tech stack to do that with?
I think I'm going to tie in a little bit with what Bruce was saying as well, because I think it's quite important to see the whole picture. If I look at how crypto and Web3 space kind of matured very quickly and grew very quickly, which to Paul's point, there was this DeFi kind of angle. So if you look at how Ethereum became very popular, it was to do with the ICO model, right? I understand the premise wasn't perhaps to start with ICOs, but the premise was to build a general purpose machine on a decentralized ledger technology. But there needs to be some kind of understanding and some kind of trigger to actually, you know, accelerate the adoption. And I think then, and as we have seen after that, the ICO, then a lot of tokens, then from the tokens came trading, which kind of went centralized and decentralized, and DeFi is based on the token trading, right? So those components, actually, you can see how we came from where we were to where we are. Bitcoin trading was a small thing. Ethereum ICO created this boom of one, fundraising, second, token manufacturing effectively, which then led to, you know, DeFi or CeFi. That's one. But I think we are too caught up in just that. And then the NFTs came. They tried to do something quite interesting. Trading of NFT was, let's just put that aside. And the whole NFT space was quite interesting because we were trying to build something which didn't exist in Web2. And I think that is, for me, that is the key. So when you start to think about what we are going to build, we should look at building something quite unique. Because if you're going to compete with Web2, it's a very mature technology. It's a lot more efficient when you do centralized things. So we have to think of something which is suited for Web3, but it's unique. And I think that's that would be my starting point. And from there, I would go into, okay, now, if I think of something unique, it could be a primitive, it could be something which could be built on something which doesn't exist. So you can actually narrow down to primitive, but the end result needs to be unique, because without that uniqueness, I think you're not going to achieve the traction that you're looking for.
It's interesting, right? Because as you say, I mean, I remember post-launch, a lot of the conversations around Ethereum IoT and being able to, you know, pay for an Airbnb with your wallet and unlock the door, or it wasn't DeFi. And I remember when we began working together, we were talking about a drone, you know, decentralized drone network, right? Very much at the application layer. Similarly, you ended up having to kind of build down. So as we were alluding to earlier, the kind of starting premise is often very different to where you end up. Some founders don't make that journey for various reasons. They might run out of cash. They might lose interest. They might stray into a domain where they don't have the kind of technical capability to execute. You three founders have managed to kind of work across cycles to kind of find fit. But it does require a dynamism on the part of the founder, right? I guess a brutal honesty as to the problem that you're solving and the ability to pivot to find that fit. Do you think it's better to start out from the point of commercialization. So I'm trying to solve a commercial problem, even if it's not the main one, just to kind of force that thought process about, well, what's the technology required to do this? Does it exist? And does that lead to an opportunity to build a primitive, some middleware, or do you think actually it's omnidirectional? It can come either way.
If you think from first principles, given where Web3 is, the obvious best place to start is at the primitive level. You're starting at the source of the problem. What type of insight and experience do you need to understand which primitive is needed immediately for a use case that's far into the future? You learn about those primitives maybe by studying the Ethereum improvement proposals, right? And then saying, what use case can I build off this specific EIP? If I was technical enough, and there's very few people like this who are going to be founders, because, you know, I'm lucky to have Trent McConaughey as my co-founder, so he could do this. I could ask stupid questions, but if I was doing this alone, I wouldn't be able to start at the primitive level. I would have start right at the top of the stack. And then if I didn't have someone like Trent, I'd be lost in the water. Like there goes my seed investment and you know, back into the corporate world, right? What I would say is the most important thing from what I've learned, and you're absolutely right, it is brutal. It's like what Jensen Huang said recently from NVIDIA. It's a lot of pain and suffering. I mean, we've been on this journey for 10 years, and the amount of glass that we've chewed in our mouth with no water is indescribable.
Again, that's all built in a public context as well. So, right, once you've got a live network, you're also a public company. So, you know, that whole founder experience has the pressure of every single decision being analyzed and everything else that's going on in the wider market. It's not for the faint-hearted, for sure. And I think people could do well, I guess, to follow the blueprint of how you guys have approached this, although, of course, not everything's transferable. You guys have done a great job of bringing in a very strong ecosystem of partners, I guess, Web3 native and then kind of more mainstream CeFi. How do you approach that BD process, that ecosystem building? How do you firstly kind of build momentum in a native context? And then how do you hopefully expand outside of that and actually grow the market participants coming into the space and the economic value that's being brought in on chain?
When you start, it's always hard, right? Because you have no partner, you have no product, then you have a hypothesis. Then you test it out. Maybe this is being validated. You try to build it. Then the first partner maybe has like made up their mind that they need something else. So initially, you just need to, I guess, put your bet somewhere, have high conviction, build it. And then you need to create this positive spinning wheel, I think, at least from a BD perspective, right? As soon as you convince one, two, three, a handful of users that this is for whatever reason the best or the right product for them, you are moving into a space where your feedback loop improves. You get the right feedback on your product within a set of users you think relevant for you. Also serves, especially I guess in this space, as a validation. An increasing number of users and participants, you are growing. And I think, and that's very, I guess, DeFi specific or Web3 specific. I mean, you have these different layers, right? You have the protocol level, you have the application layer. I think you need to target both layers and basically trying to fix the problem each of the layers has, right? The protocol layer wants to have applications using it. You as an infrastructure component can increase the builder's experience by attracting more builders through better infrastructure you're offering on the protocol layer. You're getting the applications, which then again, I think, makes you for other protocols more attractive. That was for us broadly the BD play, trying to make your users happy and fixing the product problems and being very focused on them. And then again, I mean, as I said, love to be speaking early with new applications, which go beyond, I guess, what we see today being built and understanding their needs. And as soon as we see some patterns and say, okay, this might be a product, we don't shy away from being very early and providing this and then growing into and broadening our footprint. And this is, yeah, DeFi into CeFi and now building out tooling for different applications from Oracle side.
As I think hopefully listeners can hear, this it almost felt like a founder therapy session there. I could see everyone kind of nodding if any other one was the kind of shared trauma. And this is why, you know, for us being able to bring in portfolio partners like yourselves, both as founders and as ecosystems, is incredibly valuable. So, you know, we've invested in 300 startups now. If you include co-founders, that's probably 500 founders, Web3 founders in the network now. Of course, not all directly relevant to what we're talking about here, but each with their own insight and learning. So there's a wealth of knowledge and information and battle scars. I think you guys have done a great job of highlighting. You know, we start to see patterns, right? There are trends and patterns that emerge that allow us to shortcut or fast track decision making. I think often what we find the big challenge for a Web3 founder coming in is that they're overwhelmed by all the decisions they think they have to make today. And often it's saying, hey, look, forget about that decision. Like, if you don't make this decision first, and well, you're not going to be here tomorrow to worry about that problem, you know, their future problems. Let's zoom out. Let's talk about the exciting stuff that's going on in the context of ASI and the token merger. For those that don't know, Fetch, Ocean, and Singularity merging at the token level. I know there's lots of other stuff happening around collaboration, but Bruce, I think you said it really succinctly on one of these Twitter spaces, that this doesn't force collaboration, it doesn't force integration, but it incentivizes. It gives a very hard incentive to collectively contribute towards building a shared ecosystem, which I really liked. It is a first, as far as I'm aware, at least at this scale, with this level of technology, this level of ecosystem. So maybe we could talk specifically about this initiative, you know, from your perspectives, what was the driver? You know, why now? Was it because of what's happening in AI generally? Is it that you think in a Web3 context, the there's more competition, there needs to be consolidation? And then perhaps we can get into what we think this might more generally mean for kind of digital assets. But Bruce, maybe to kind of feed into that soundbite that I took from you, hopefully I kind of phrased in the right way.
I'll take it from two perspectives. First, the crypto Web3, and then the macro, and then if Himayun has something else. What we've been talking about today is use cases, traction, adoption. And for me, this token merger is an acknowledgement that we are going to be focusing on traction and adoption. Right now, the UX onboarding for new people coming into Web3 is horrendous. That's normal. I remember working with modems back in the mid-90s. Same thing. You know, 30 steps to get your first token if it's not Bitcoin. And so that UX onboarding is very hard. And having one token for anybody working in the AI and data space in crypto reduces that friction significantly. We all have been building individual technologies that are very complementary. We all know that there's different parts of the stack that are complementary. And it's just a no-brainer for us to work together, starting with our three projects and hopefully with many more others coming in, so that the friction to enter isn't just the tokens anymore. It's also not the technology. So that's the Web3 space. Popping stack, obviously, the large internet platforms have caught wind. The AI since ChatGPT in October, November 2022 has really lit a fire and shown people that AI is now here. After, for instance, my co-founder Trent has been working in it for 25 years. Everything that we thought of in 2013 is now, it's showtime. And so for 10 years, we could work in a space very protected in our own little world, set aside, nobody cared. Now it's real. Working with Fetch, working with SingularityNet, and hopefully a whole bunch more others, we can start providing a viable alternative to the Web2 world. We don't have to win. I think we can win, but we don't have to win. We have to just provide a viable alternative, just like Bitcoin provides a viable alternative to profligate money printing of a central bank.
Bruce alluded to the fact that this has a core of teams that are kind of initially involved and initiating that merger. You've alluded to the fact that there are more potentially joining. So I forget the year, maybe 2017, we kind of published this paper called Community Token Economies, which advocated for the idea that it might make sense in some instances for token economies to merge in some form. To be honest, we actually forgot about it. It was only until all of a sudden we saw you guys were actually doing it. We were like, holy shit, we were right. We totally forgot about this. And I remember then I kind of picked up the phone to UH. So by the way, Ala had nothing to do with this merger, you know, at least not directly. I pick up the phone to you and you say, well, of course, it's obvious. This is obvious that we're doing this, but nevertheless, not easy to pull off. But one of the things we talked about in the community token economy thesis was this idea of gravity. So once this core built up mass, a certain level of mass, it kind of sucked other parties in. You had to make a decision. Are you in or are you out? And the more momentum, the more mass it built, the more gravity it built, the harder it would be to kind of resist that. How are you looking at gravity, you know, token gravity? What level of interest are you seeing bringing people into the ASI orbit?
I think the core principles remain the same. When I say complementary, it could be competitive as well. I mean, we're not restricting one technology against the other. So we can actually have multiple technologies. The reasoning, technical reasoning behind all of this is, how can we make it easy for developers to deploy a solution? Doesn't matter what technology they want to choose. They can choose from multiple. That's one objective. The second objective is there is a cognitive kind of war going on where intelligent people, people who know what they're doing, people who are passionate and building technologies, they have a choice to make. You know, technically capable people generally struggle with all the peripheral activities which Web3 actually imposes on you. That's different in the normal space where, you know, you have just fundraising and then you put your head down and you develop and you deploy. You don't have to build a huge communities day one, because, you know, one of the reasons why you have to build huge communities on day one is because your fundraising mechanism relies on it. I wouldn't call it menial, but it is a standard piece of work that you need to do. Build a community, spend time, spend money. If you take that away and leave the core focus of the team to be on building the technology which enables adoption, that in my mind is pretty obvious, right? How much has Web3 community grown in the last year? Not that much, right? There is a limited pot of community people. There's a limited money which is growing, but still there's a limitation. Really take the benefit of that. When you have so many projects, so much distribution, yes, for smaller projects, the price appreciation might be better, but ultimate survival relies on adoption, and adoption relies on the ability for people to build solutions on a technology stack. And to give them that technology stack, I think it makes sense to put these technologies in a place where easy deployment can happen. And you know, multiple tokens add multiple complexity, governance, integration, which chain, what bridges, you know, safety, security, because of just bridges alone. Yeah. And you have to think of all those things. And us as the kind of the founders who've gone through the ups and downs, like at least twice, both ways, we appreciate the effort that is required and it consumes you. So we're trying to make it easy for this space. And as Bruce said, it's an alternative to big tech.
I think it's a really, really good point for a founder starting out now. The idea that you've got to do all the normal stuff of being a founder, build some tech, raise some money, find product market fit, as well as build a community that translates into a market, grow that capital market to continue to finance product development, commercialization, all these things, at a scale that could compete with big tech is a huge job, right? And you guys have actually already done that, right? I think technically the token merger just as is would put you guys comfortably in the top 20 digital assets. That then brings a level of capitalization, which is still perhaps a fraction of big tech, but certainly allows you to have a shot. And I think for somebody starting out in a pre-seed seed startup, you know, it's incredibly intimidating to think that you've got to build all that, let alone even a live network. And as you say, some technical founders just don't even want to think about that, right? They just want to be left alone to kind of build out their tech. So I think that in and of itself is huge justification for why this kind of a approach makes sense. Sadly, we're kind of running out of time a little bit, but maybe kind of one final question before I close off and just talk about the program itself. What do you think that this represents for the wider ecosystem? Do you expect this to be a precedent that will be copied, you know, if it's successful? Do you actually think it's representative of wider market consolidation? At Outlier, we've already seen this happen in slightly different ways across the portfolio. So, for example, Futureverse did a roll-up of pre-token initiatives that made sense, building complementary technology, and then launched Root, the Root network. You guys have done it the other way around, later stage mature networks. What do you think that we can infer from this more generally about the wider ecosystem?
I think there will certainly, if successful, there will certainly be a trend, because that's how we all humans are. You know, the success will show what the trends will be. So I think there will be some trends. I think you could do it both ways. You could do the roll-ups like you suggested, you know, pre-token release. We feel it's important that you want to get to the commercialization stage, and you need some maturity in the technology, not just an idea, not just a paper. It needs to be mature enough to integrate and then deliver. And I think delivering is really the key point for me. We need to deliver, and we need to deliver fast, and we need to deliver unique technologies. And we want it to be a lot varied, so you have options for people to choose. But ease of use in terms of integrations, single token, utility, all of those things.
We have several teams in various sectors, gaming, AI data, et cetera, DeFi and stuff. And it's hard for me to see a coalescence in other sectors. For me, somehow AI and data made a lot of sense. A, because we have the internet giants, and B, because we're all building complementary technologies with not that much overlap. We were, you know, and if there was overlap, there's nothing wrong with offering, let's say, 5 privacy preserving computational services, right? Somebody can pick and choose, and there are trade-offs with each one. So you could essentially build a complete product stack that gives people that modality of choosing what makes sense for them, all within the same token. And so I don't know if it's kind of a Goldilocks place that we occupy that allows this to happen, because I couldn't really see this in DeFi. Like, does it make sense for Balancer and Uniswap to join up? Probably not. In the gaming systems, I think it's based more on the chains that they're based on. So the Solana chain for meme coins, or it used to be EOS or something. There's another Tron or something like that for gaming in Asia and stuff like that. So obviously coalescence could make sense over time for whatever reason, scale, easier onboarding and stuff. But for some reason, I think AI and data is currently in that Goldilocks space, and I'd be excited to see who else is in there, but I can't see anything else right now.
I guess we're also seeing things like app chains, right? You know, app chains is another form of coalescence concentration, people choosing to kind of roll things up and have a specialized solution for a particular vertical. But Paul, I don't know if there's any kind of other insights that you want to add into this.
Sima, you mentioned, I think, obviously, depending on success, and congratulations, by the way. I think that's a very, very exciting development you guys just recently shared with this coalition. I'm expecting to see this across different stacks, because, I mean, it is kind of an old concept to somehow merge, no matter in like what type of, if it's a merger or a coalition. You bring stuff together when you believe it creates either financial value or on the product, or ideally, as in this case here, on those two levels as well. I think we also see, like looking at Gnosis, for example, you see a lot of tokens for different products, or with Protocol Labs, where you see that everything within Protocol Labs is being, again, modularized from like entities. So I think we'll see, I mean, we know this from hundreds of years, villages come together, they split apart. I think a similar thing we'll see, and exciting to have this very very large use case here, and I'm expecting to see more of those sure of the success you will have with it.
I'd recommend Master Switch for those that haven't read it, which talks about bundling and unbundling in information technologies going back to radio and all the way through to kind of internet and web. And that is a question, you know, what does that mean in a Web3 context where there may be no commercial entity to acquire? So I think, again, yet more innovation happening in terms of the business model, and perhaps this cycle is going to all be about mergers and acquisitions of various sorts. Thanks all for coming on. It's been great to kind of catch up with you actually and talk, you know, more generally about your perspectives on the market. I think the best advert for Outlier is really the founders that we get to work with and the knowledge that we get to aggregate for the next generation of founders. And again, big thank you to all for joining us as portfolio partners in this program to support with mentorship and ecosystem and technical support as well. Quickly, a kind of call to action for the program itself. So applications are now open until the end of April. You can apply at outlierventures.io/basecamp/AI. Awful URL. If you get stuck with that, just go to outlierventures.io and you'll find it in a couple of clicks. The program should be beginning around middle of May for about 3 months. We are looking at pre-seed, seed stage. Sometimes we do go in late seed. We can accommodate for those various stages, but often we prefer that there are co-founders, unless there's one really strong founder, and often that's a commercial and technical founder for many of the reasons that we just discussed, right? It is fully global because it's fully remote. So we work with founders wherever they are. We literally, if you look at the portfolio distribution at the moment, it's all around the world. So please do apply wherever you are. Don't be put off by that. And you get access to world-class subject matter experts from across token, legal, product, technical design, you name it, the 360 areas of innovation and risk that you have to manage as a Web3 founder. We help you secure investment from us and our partners. That's it. So make sure you apply if you are innovating in the space. And once again, a big thank you to the three of you for joining us today.